Hello, everybody. Today we're going to be diving straight into the 90s and 2000s cartoons, entertainment, television. My name is Angel Figueroa, and I will be talking about Scooby-Doo.
My name is Emma Simon. I'll be talking about the Magic School Bus.
My name's Tyler C., and I'll be talking about the Rugrats.
I'm Tanya Stassi, and I'll be talking about Daria.
I'm Angelica McCombs. I'll be talking about Rick and Morty.
You just heard from our group members. We're group number 5, and this is Scooby-Doo by Angel. Scooby-Doo originated in 1969, and it was broadcasted on CBS from 1969 all the way up until 1975, and ABC continued to air the show until 1986. Multiple spin-offs have been created from the original series, like A Pup Named Scooby-Doo, featuring the gang as children, Scooby-Doo and Mystery Incorporated, and the newest and least popular Be Cool Scooby-Doo. So Scooby-Doo had a phenomenal impact on kids' television, and it continued to broadcast these television shows throughout the centuries, and it's still liked and loved today.
Did you ever imagine yourself crawling along with spiders or experiencing perhaps the immune system war that goes on within the person's body? Well, perhaps Craig Walker, the vice president of Scholastic Co., had such an imaginative thought when he decided that we needed a story that would combine both science and fictional settings so that kids would have an easy and fun way to learn science. The resulting creation, which was actually a book, was The Magic School Bus by Joanna Cole and Bruce Degan. The plot follows a crazy but lovable teacher called Miss Frizzle, or her students call her the Frizz, and her classroom as they go on unusual field trips on an equally unusual yellow bus, which shrinks, expands, or transforms to fit the situation. In fact, it became a spider in one of the episodes. So although it's a cartoon, the science facts are actually really accurate and relayed in an interesting way, and there are also jokes and funny puns throughout. So for example, one of the students has an aunt named Arizona Jones, which sounds very familiar to the swashbuckling Indiana Jones that we all love to watch. For the accuracy, one day the class goes on a field trip through Arnold's digestive tract, and you see things like the peristalsis of the throat, which is the contracting and relaxing so that things move down, and then the acid of the stomach or the villi or in the small intestines that sucks up nutrients, and the water drawing of the large intestines. This became a television series in 1994, and Deborah Forte, who is the president of Scholastic Entertainment, was hearing concerns from parents and teachers about how to improve science education for girls and minorities, and we find that in Miss Frizzle, the school teacher. Aside from science facts, though, they also have passively instilled values. For example, the classroom is very diverse. There's Arnold, who is Jewish-American, or Carlos, who is Mexican-American, and Dorothy Ann, who is a book learner. And so you also see different ways that, I guess, different characteristics of kids, like you have a new student named Phoebe, or sportsy kid Ralphie, or tomboy Wanda.
So it seems like it was a very diverse community in the yellow bus. Like, it seemed to be very inclusive.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so now we're going to dive right into Rugrats. Rugrats was a Nickelodeon cartoon that aired from August 11th, 1991 to August 1st, 2004. Like other cartoons before its time and after its time, the creators strived to teach life lessons through the eyes of people similar to their audiences, and in this case, it was toddlers. So the big thing about the Rugrats was it was the first Nicktoon, which Nicktoon is a cartoon made by Nickelodeon, to release a movie, which then led to accumulating a larger audience that people who didn't normally watch the cartoon. This movie was actually the first animated movie from a cartoon to beat a Disney movie in the box office, which was really revelating and, you know, showed Disney that they had competition. Rugrats was so popular during its time due to the fact that it had an all-age appeal and mostly anyone could sit down and enjoy it. And I think a lot of cartoons after Rugrats was created kind of strived for that. You look at cartoons like SpongeBob and other cartoons that are currently airing, and they try to be relatable to everyone. So, you know, the main focus, obviously, is to get a children audience, but there's also, you know, humor for adults to enjoy. So to talk about a little bit more about SpongeBob SquarePants and to compare them to, Rugrats was the second longest running Nickelodeon cartoon of all time with 172 episodes, and that's only behind SpongeBob SquarePants. So when you look at that time period between 1991 and 2004, you have a lot of differences, and that's when animation really became, you know, so relevant for cartoons and for TV shows and for movies. You know, just look at all the cartoons and movies now that use animation, and that's kind of because of how successful shows like Rugrats were. An interesting fact that I found during my research about this cartoon is that all the toddlers, even the male ones, were voiced by female voice actors. That's due mainly to the fact that, you know, kids have squeaky voices, and, you know, children usually, or women tend to have higher pitched voices. You see that a lot now too with like stuff like Family Guy. Like, you see a lot of people that aren't the same sex as their character voicing that character, and it's really interesting. And I tend to think that Rugrats was kind of what started that in television. So
I'm gonna be talking about Daria. Have you guys watched this show?
Yes.
Okay. Cool. So for you guys that haven't, do you know Beavis and Butthead?
Yeah, of course.
So Daria started as a little recurring character that used to come on and off in Beavis and Butthead, but she finally got her own show in 1997, and it ran until 2002. So around that time, TV was mostly masculine, and also we need to see that it was also a show for MTV. So MTV didn't have much directed towards females, so that's kind of how Daria came to life. They wanted to get more of a female audience in. And also, another thing to note is that Daria came about the time where Dawson's Creek, do you guys know Dawson's Creek?
Yeah, everybody knows Dawson's Creek.
So Dawson's Creek and, you know, Christina Aguilera and Britney Spears were really big back then. So Daria is kind of like the opposite side of all this culture. Daria is more of a girl that she has self-esteem, but she is very a skeptic in nature. She doesn't really follow popular culture. And she's basically all anti, you know, popular culture overall. One of the quotes that she usually says is that, "I don't have low self-esteem, I have low esteem for everybody else." So that kind of characterizes her in a short sentence. Another thing that I found interesting is that the show actually copied a lot of characters from pop culture itself. For example, Jane's brother, Trent, he was actually based on Dave Navarro from the Foo Fighters, and they actually had a couple of songs here and there playing during the shows. There's another one, Professor Mr. DiMartino. So this was a guy that was always yelling and had like an eye twitch, and this was basically based on Christopher Walken in Pulp Fiction. So there's a little bit of things here and there that the creators of the show, which were Glenn Eichler and Susie Louise Lin, that they took from popular culture and just to add and then gave life to the show that became really popular in an alternative kind of way of seeing life, I guess, that wasn't old with, you know, the popular thinking of the era. Another thing that I also thought was cool was that Daria was always green gender neutral. There was never talk about menstrual periods or, you know, oh, my boobs grew or anything like that. It was all just like a monotone style where basically anybody could identify with it.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's important to see, like, yourself identified because especially as a kid.
Well, it seems like a lot of, like, Disney shows now kind of follow that mold of, like, the female star, like, female star actress, or not star actress, but, like, I don't know, the character to follow the female, yeah. Like a sassy female. Like, it seems like a lot of Disney or just even other productions have tried to follow that mold.
Definitely. They're trying to make them more independent. Yeah.
I'm going to be talking about Rick and Morty. I'm pretty sure everyone listening to this knows of Rick and Morty. They've been so popular. I've watched them also myself. So, you know, research and everything. Their first pilot episode was on December 2nd, 2013. So it's very, very recent. And I picked this because I think that it really shows our current sense of humor, which is, I would say it's kind of like memes. I'm sure everyone like knows what memes are. I personally love memes. But I think that there's so many things happening in our lives, like depressing things around us, and especially with social media, you like see depressing, like terrible stuff every day, and you know, joking about it and like things like that. Like even younger people are doing that now, like teens are even doing that now, and I think that that's how we like deal with it. And so Rick and Morty, they talk about realistic and crazy out of this world fiction things like mixed together with some depressed and deep things on the inside. So they talk about even the meaning of life. They have all these different realities, and so even if something crazy like depressing, like the world ends, they can just hop to another parallel universe and start over again. So basically it's realistic in that like things can happen, the world can end, tragedies can happen, but it's unrealistic in that, you know, they have spaceships and aliens, so it really, you know, mixes them together. They also talk about suicide and bad life situations, not just, you know, big world tragedies. And even the main characters, like Morty, has probably died a few times. Rick, you know, they've probably died a few times. Like, they take things like that and put it into a show that people watch. So let's say like you're feeling depressed, or maybe you're having trouble with mental health issues and things like that. You can kind of laugh at that yourself to make it seem like, oh, it's like not that big of a deal. I can get through it, like they can get through it. So I think it's very important for, you know, young people to watch things like that and lighten up their lives. So
So would you say that it's more like a sarcastic type of humor?
Yeah, like shows like SNL. Also, it's not a cartoon, but
right.
I think that's one of the very popular things, because adults usually do joke in that way, but it's getting even to younger people now, like kids now, because they're not getting insensitized.
More of a dark humor.
Right, because
well, yeah,
society as a whole has become, you know, had this dry sense of humor, and it's been more prevalent now. And you can definitely tell in Rick and Morty how dry their humor is. And it takes us, you know, a sense of, like, intelligence to understand most of the jokes. So
it's a big transition from, you know, the Magic School Bus and Rugrats, where there was a little more of a sense of, and Scooby-Doo, where there was more of a sense of innocence and, you know.
It's very light and happy.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you also have to realize that those cartoons, you know, were aimed towards children. Rick and Morty's more aimed towards, like, you know, older teenagers to adults.
That's true.
You're not going to want to show Rick and Morty to your 10-year-old.
Yeah.
But I mean, but it, you can definitely tell through the trend of these cartoons and like the ones that we've talked about how they target their audiences, and how, like, you know, back in the 90s, you know, there were TV shows where people didn't even sleep in the same bed, and not cartoons, but they didn't like share the same bed. And now, you know, you have shows like Family Guy, and you see, you know, nudity and all this other stuff, and you can definitely tell how stuff has changed and what has become important.
Right,
it reflects a lot of our society, I guess.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting about Scooby-Doo that, like, you can really see the change in Scooby-Doo because it's the same show, but it seems very different than when it originated.
Definitely, like the technology that they use for the animation is totally different than it was back in the 1969 when it first aired. And it's hard to believe, but the newer Scooby-Doos are actually less popular than the older ones, even though the animation nowadays is much better. And it's crazy.
Well, it kind of just shows that, you know, the content is sometimes more prevalent and more important than how you go about showing that content.
Yeah, definitely.
Right on, Tyler.
Okay, so that was our podcast. I think it was very interesting to pick this topic. I really enjoyed it just because it's still history, but not boring history, and something we can all relate to. There's not many people that haven't experienced like waking up when you're little and watching cartoons.
Saturday morning cartoons.
Exactly.
And it's really important to see these changes in like television, because in society, you know, stuff like that, stuff that you're interested in, it really shows how you are as a person.
Yeah.
So what you're interested in, you know, how it's changed since the 90s.
Okay. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.